All right, I'll start. So I hope you're stretched out. So my name is Erin Fitzgerald, and I am a graduate student at Johns Hopkins University, working with Fred Jelinek and others. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about speech reconstruction, reconstructing spontaneous speech, with which Jan Heitsch spoke a little briefly about earlier. So what is reconstruction? Our concept of the idea is that an ASR system would accomplish speech reconstruction if, number one, the output were to represent in flawless and fluent English the message the speaker wanted to convey. So there are two parts of this. The first is fluent and grammatical sentences is what we're aiming for. And secondly, we want to have minimal loss of content or intended meaning. So we want to, without changing the meaning of what the person was saying, or minimally changing the meaning, clean the sentence up so that it's fluent, grammatical, and suitable for post-processing. So fluent and grammatical, what I mean by this is, well, there are many cases, I guess I'm better standing here. So fluency, this includes, of course, non-essential items such as filler words, like, I mean, okay. Also some repairs, some corrections that that speakers tend to include in their speech, which includes repeats, like I went to the store, or repairs where they correct something they said, such as on Monday, I mean on Tuesday, I'm going to see my grandmother. And then also restarch, which have the potential to be much more complex, where one thought is abandoned and another begins. So you might say, did you see, I wonder why my teacher hasn't given me the paper back yet, or something. Secondly, there's grammaticality. So the way we're defining this is that all SUs here stands for sentential unit, so basically any utterance or item that we're considering at a time, which might not be a correct sentence or a full sentence, maybe even not having a verb. But so all sentences, all SUs that do contain verbs should have the appropriate arguments in the appropriate order, with no additional arguments, and with the appropriate tense and number features. Loss of content, there's a potential loss of content during reconstruction through a couple of different steps. One potential loss occurs if the referendum, meaning the part that the speaker said first before they repaired it with a separate section of text, if this referendum includes unique and necessary information, then simply deleting this region can alter the meaning, or you can lose some of the meaning of what the speaker was trying to say. So in this example here, I have edit tags before and at the end of the correction that the speaker said. But so the sentence is, but I think in general things in Europe, I don't think people are chain smokers necessarily. And so if you were to delete this entire first edit region, then you lose the fact, you lose the entire context of in Europe here, that it's people in Europe specifically who are being referred to as not being chain smokers. In addition, any type of speech recognition errors, ASR errors, can also, of course, lead to content loss. So if you miss a word, so for example, the second sentence here, I had not heard anything about her own, like, with. Obviously, you've lost her on the news lately, and by correcting these speech errors, we can be as true to the original content and speaker intention as possible. So speech recognition, or speech reconstruction, is a relatively new area of research, though there are areas that are related to this work. It includes edit and filler detection. There's been some preliminary work on this. Paraphrasing, perhaps a machine translation, so bad English to good English. Semantic role labeling, to a certain extent, and I'll describe that later. And then other formalisms for deep meaning analysis, which include the texto-grammatical representation that is worked at here in Prague, head-driven phrase structure grammar, or HPSG, which there is much work on this at University of Saarland, lexical functional grammar, combinatorial categorical grammars, etc. So there are a number of formalisms for deeper analysis of the meaning of a sentence that we'd like to try to take advantage of. So why do we care? Jan, again earlier, spoke a little bit about the motivation for this work. Some of the motivation is that ASR is getting better. So as speech recognition systems are better at recording all the uhs, and corrections that we give, it brings up the question of, do we really care about a verbatim transcript? We really want to use this to extract information later on. So we should make this, instead of worrying about getting exactly the correct ums and uhs in the right place, we want to express in a concise form the meaning that the speaker intended to convey. And additionally, there are many types of downstream natural language processing methods which typically expect grammatical input. Machine translation from, in this case, I guess, from English to a foreign language being one prime example of where grammatical input is typically expected. But also if you're working on summarization or information retrieval in some cases, some type of simple anaphora resolution while cleaning up these errors could help information extraction, et cetera. And then finally, improved transcript readability would be important. So the current state of the art, I'll describe here the NIST Rich Transcript. There was an evaluation task that the American government set up as a competition. And so teams took both manual transcripts and the speech recognition output, and they tried to automatic label four different types. And so here's an example sentence. The dog, I mean the cat, ran quickly. He was scared. So this is a sentential unit. And in this evaluation, teams worked to identify filler words, such as and I mean. Also, you can't read it very well, I apologize, but an interruption point, which is the point where the speaker stops what they were saying and corrects themselves. So here, the dog, I mean the cat. So previous to the cat is an interruption point. The dog is an edit word, or what we call a reparandum. And additionally, SU boundaries, additional sentence boundaries. So especially in speech recognition, speakers don't typically say period at the end of a sentence. You have to infer or extract from the data where the sentence boundaries are, and this could be corrected. So there are teams that did fairly well at this, but even the state-of-the-art approach to this, which was a noisy channel tree-adjoining grammar model, worked on by Mark Johnson, Eugene Charniak, Matt Leese, and others, well, I guess in this room, several people. But even here, the labeling error rate was fairly high for the edits. So it works fairly well, but it doesn't. The problem here hasn't been solved. And in fact, there are many cases when you go through the transcripts for the corpora that you see that maybe even this metadata extraction, this simple edit and filler detection, isn't quite enough. So here are a few examples that I'll go through quickly. So when smoking's very, it's an addiction. So if you correct it and get rid of the parts, everything except for the final statement, then you lose that smoking is the addiction here. The second example, I won't read all of it, but we have a tense change from have to has. We have a non-rough copy. So we have, instead of the repair, we have the restart, where it's not exactly in the same format as what was seen before, so therefore it's more difficult to capture and the formalisms that are used. And then this final sentence is even more involved in the type of reconstruction that would be needed, in that it requires movement of sentences, movement of phrases, etc. And because we started late, I won't go into everything. But so there are many problems to be solved. There are a number, going through some corpora, I came up with a number of types of construction errors that we aim to solve. This includes tense and number errors, the filler and edit errors, which I just described to you, deleted content from the edit region, meaning when there is an edit and we want to preserve some of the data instead of throwing it all away in the reparandum, some simple anaphora and coreference that's redundant. We want to be able to capture these. The sentence here, you can't read it well, but it says, when I watch the news, like the evening news or the late news, and a lot of the people there, the citizens, the people there, they were really against it. there's obviously a lot of redundancy here, and if we can use some information that these structures don't fit well into the types of arguments that the verbs are expecting, and in addition they have matching number qualities, etc., perhaps there's a way we can reduce the redundancy. I already mentioned the ASR errors, trying to correct them. Additionally, more prevalently, there are fragments and sentence boundary errors that we hope to be able to correct through reconstruction. In terms of meaning analysis, we hope to do some type of predicate argument analysis to see the verbs and see that either something's missing. So families probably, we can tell it's incomplete, but this maybe analysis could help us know that it's complete or incomplete. And that if we were to remove this first sentence boundary and connect it to the next sentence, that we would have a better segmentation and it would be more easy to analyze in downstream processing. Additionally, people tend to embed their discourse. So in the middle of stating one idea, they interrupt themselves to add extra information and then go back to the final idea. So cutting this out could help to make everything a little bit more understandable. So the main building the foundation, there are a number of steps that we really need to have in place before we can progress far in speech reconstruction. And the first is gold standard reconstructions, because at this point, our concept of what reconstruction should be is that we want to simplify the structures, the syntax, as much as possible while keeping the meaning intact without changing it. But we have no gold standard database, no natural application where someone had the original statements, the transcript, and what it would be better written as if you were to read it in a magazine. So in January of 2007, just next month, at Johns Hopkins, we are hiring some students to do some gold standard annotations on some data. We are tracking alignments, the types of changes that are made to correct these sentences, adding neutral words, moving phrases, also adding some annotation for semantic roles, and linking that to prop bank arguments identification. So this will be happening in January. And so let me tell you a little bit about the type of data that we're using. We looked at a number of different spontaneous corpora to decide what would be best. And the Fisher conversational telephone speech is what we ended up choosing in the end. And this Fisher, so it's telephone speech, strangers talking to each other on the phone. But it's spontaneous. There's a lot of data in general available. And a small segment of the data, most importantly, there are a number of rich resources already available. So there are pen tree bank style annotation trees that were manually produced by the LDC. There are some annotations of edit words. We have some speech recognition results from IBM and SRI, which are very good. So this is the data that we're focusing on. We did look at a number of other types of data as well, hoping to find something with a higher cognitive load. So if you're thinking harder, then you seem to be more likely to make errors. So, for example, meeting data where participants are trying to plan how to solve a project had some interesting linguistic phenomenon. However, the word error rate was typically very high. MIT lectures, so course lectures, also had interesting parts, but other detracting qualities that we thought would make the task difficult. So we ended up, the annotation that will happen on the Fisher data. This is an example of what the reconstruction, what the annotators will be doing. So for example, here's a sentence, the Joe millionaires, we know that that's not going anywhere. So an annotator here would, first of all, come up with their correction, their reconstruction, which different annotators might have different approaches. They would also add in their own alignments and label the alignments to say what types of changes they made here. So if you can't read it here, there are three speech repairs that are in green, one phrase movement, one deleted coreference, and one morphology substitution that changed the number of the verb to be. So in initial annotation work that was done, we noted what types of changes were made, and about 30% of all the words that were annotated had some change to it, or rather the links between them, about 30%, had some label on it that was other than the default label. About 75% of the changes were deletions. Most of those are filler words and edits, so there are fragments, which is the restarts instead of the repairs. There are other coreference and other changes that are there. Sentence boundaries in this case was very prevalent in the types of changes that were made. And then there were also occurrences of inserting words, moving arguments, and making substitutions, etc. So one reason we did this was because a big concern of ours is that there are so many problems, but maybe they don't happen quite enough, or that no single problem happens enough that we can get a lot of good training data, which means either we need a lot of training data or we need to be able to focus in quickly on where these specific types of errors occur. So speaking of that, a second concern of ours is collecting densely errorful data. So we want to be able to automatically extract what type of sentences have problems and what don't, so that we can train on sentences that have those problems, so that we can, during test time, only try to reconstruct sentences that have problems, etc. So in this case, this is just a 500-sentence extraction that I took, and I manually divided into well-formed sentences and ill-formed sentences. So in this case, about 25% of all the sentences had some error in them. And then I tried different mechanisms to see how we could best identify automatically where these mistakes occurred. We looked at edit detection, which I described earlier, different types of parse scores, and we're looking at prosody features as well. So using the state-of-the-art edit detection, which I described for you before as the best in the competition in 2004, what we did was, instead of looking at the accuracy of specific edit labels, we took any time that a sentence had at least one edit that was found in the sentence, we threw it in the bad column, and if it had no edits ID'd, then we threw it in the good column. So the end result was we had about 97% precision, meaning that when we threw something into the bad column and called it a bad sentence, typically we were correct. However, we only caught about 65% of the bad sentences, and in our case, recall is maybe a little more important than precision. We want to make sure we get as much of this bad data as possible, so we have a good model to train from. But still, it was a good start. Something else to note is, after simple cleaning, meaning we deleted anything that was called a filler word or an edit word, then in the bad column, a little less than half of the sentences still had some problem that needed to be corrected in addition to these the fillers and edits. And about 12% of the sentences that were in the good column still had some problem. So we also looked at parse scores in different ways. We looked at Eugene Charniak's constituent parser, and we trained it using Switchboard to come up with the parses, and then we scored the parses based on a Wall Street Journal model so that we would be more heavily biased towards fluent sentences rather than sentence structures that had been seen in other bad speech. And so using this, if we took data all of a similar length, so say all the sentences of 10 words only, and we took the parse score, divided it by the number of of nodes in the tree, and we sorted everything, we found an average precision of about 80%, meaning that on average, if we chose a point at random to be our threshold where we called everything above that point good and everything below bad, on average, we are about 80% correct. However, if we looked at data at all lengths, it was only about 30% correct, meaning that, well, one of the biggest problems here was that short sentences hurt a lot, meaning that if you have a sentence that says definitely or January, perhaps this parse score wouldn't be great, but on the other hand, it's not what we consider an unacceptable sentence in a speech discourse application. We also looked at dependency. Keith Hall has a dependency parser based on maximum spanning trees. So trained on switchboard with both semantic and syntactic heads. On average, the precision was better, although if we looked just at the data that had been taken away that we already identified with the edit detection model, then only about 50% was the average precision. So some quick takeaways from this is that better normalization is needed, especially for the constituent parser approach, and that precision is still low when we haven't already been able to capture this, the fact that the sentence is bad before. Some new results that we have, though, using the HPSG parser, and this is some joint work with Yi Zheng and Valia Cordoni at Saarbrücken. So using just a manual grammar, so rule-based grammar, no out-of-vocabulary handling even, the precision, meaning the probability that an unparsed sentence turned out to be bad, was about 76%, and the recall was about 77%, which means altogether the F score is about the same as the edit detection approach of identifying bad sentences. However, here our recall is higher. So I haven't yet, this is only from last week, so I haven't yet been able to try to overlap and combine the two features, but I hope that combining the two, we might be able to increase the recall even more as far as identifying poor sentences. Prosody features is still something we need to consider, but once we have the word level annotation, which we are working on now, then we hope to use some of Zach Schaffran's tool to extract different prosody. Prosody, I mean the acoustic features, when the person paused, when they maybe enunciated or used more energy in the speech that they are using. So we hope that prosody might, for example, correlate with when the annotator wrote down that you should insert a neutral verb here because they left out the verb to be. Or perhaps this is a restart of a sentence, a fragment, because they stressed in a certain way, changed their pitch in a certain way. So this is still future work. Another thing that we need to, before anyone can do much work with speech reconstruction, especially in the PIER approach of using meaning analysis for speech reconstruction, is to have some level of meaning representation to identify predicate argument structure on poor sentences, basically. So we want to use predicate argument analysis, identifying the verbs and what arguments are appropriate or required to use with them. I don't think we need much deeper semantic analysis than this, but we want this shallow semantic analysis to determine the core structure of the sentence, to come up with the basic building blocks of what the speaker was trying to convey, and then make sure at least those parts and their adjuncts are in place when we reconstruct the sentence. But all of the analysis methods currently in use were designed for grammatical sentences. So some of the approaches we're looking at, semantic role labeling via prop bank and frame neck type resources, such as the work done by Gildea and Jarofsky, using technogrammatical representation, using HPSG with minimal recursion semantics, and again, HPSG is a functional grammar with some ties to a semantic representation, and it includes some predicate argument analysis. So during the speech annotation process, well, here's an example of how we might use semantic labeled semantic roles to help us in reconstruction. So again, we have this sentence, the Joe Millionaires, we know that that's not going anywhere. Let's say we had So the first thing I want to say is that current approaches to semantic role labeling are based primarily on grammatical sentences and the grammatical structure. So here on the left, I have what was the manual tree, the manual annotation for the syntax of this sentence here. And on the right, I have the output of the Czarniak parser on the same sentence. So of course, you can see immediately without even understanding the trees that there's a different shape to the two. One of the most notable changes is that in the manual annotation, there are these edited nodes, which the parser in this case doesn't predict. There are also, in this case, for example, is a correction, and the second appears in the sentence, and here it is an embedded structure. So if you're depending only on syntactic features, The concern is that semantic role labeling approaches currently in use won't work for these types of sentences. But let's say we had this sentence and we used some simple edit detection to get rid of a few of the initial errors, corrections. So we identify here that there are two main verbs. There's the verb know and the verb to go, which has some modals attached to it. For each of these sentences, so for know, we have two arguments. We have we, and then that's not going anywhere, and then go, we also have two arguments. Now, looking at this, we have this additional noun phrase at the beginning, which doesn't appear to belong to any specific sentence or to any specific predicate. So we want to use verb argument valency as a cue for reconstruction. In this case, what we might choose to do, there are really three options. The first is perhaps we just throw away the Joe Millionaires. We think that maybe that was something that was spoken, and then it wasn't intended to be included in the final sentence. So we throw it away and just have, we know that that's not going anywhere, which is an adequate English sentence. A second option is that maybe it should belong to one of these two verbs, and then we should decide how that should work. So in this case, if we believe that the Joe Millionaires belongs to the verb to go, then that means we have one additional argument that doesn't belong in the predicate argument structure. And so in this case, that can assist us in deciding that this was a co-reference that we should delete, that the Joe Millionaires and the that here both refer to the same argument. And since the Joe Millionaires is more specific, it's not a pronoun, we use this instead in the final reconstruction. So this is an example of how that might work. I mentioned that these are two other approaches for deep analysis. Technogrammatical analysis, as Sylvia just mentioned, the English technogrammatical trees are still, the theory is still being developed and the resources aren't quite available yet. But for HPSG, there has been a number of, a large amount of work in English. And the coverage right now was as low as 35% before some grammar changes were there, but now we have 76%, and it's even higher if you clear out some of the filler words, et cetera. And in the HPSG, there's a lot of the work that's in the lexicon. So for example, the word gave here includes what its arguments ought to be, and this is the type of information we hope to use for reconstruction. Once we have all of this done and we've started reconstructing, we'll need to choose an appropriate evaluation metric. Again, during the annotation, we have each sentence will be reconstructed by three different people so that we can hopefully use similar evaluation to machine translation, using parse scores, language model scores, et cetera, inference approaches, and downstream processing. Those are other ways that we hope to evaluate speech reconstruction in the future. So this is basically the approach that we have right now at Johns Hopkins and the types of things that we're working on. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts during the break if you'd like to come up to me and tell me what you think about this approach. And we're also looking for new researchers to help us join the effort. And then one final plug. There is some other prior work going on at Johns Hopkins with Keith Hall, who's not here. But he's working on maximum spanning trees, MST-based dependency parsing and re-ranking, and trying to use this in machine translation decoding. And if you have interest in working on this also, we may be able to support you at Johns Hopkins to work on this type of work. So thank you, and I hope you learned something. Are there questions? Well, you can. Yes.
What do you do with the embedded utterances? When if you have
the discourse, yeah.
A sentence like the Joe Millionaire, I guess, is not going anywhere.
Right.
So does this, I guess, get lost, or is it a marker of bad?
In our case, something like I guess would be lost. It would be considered a filler. And so we would throw that away. If some of the more complex embedded sentences, like at bars, I hear in Boston, there are a lot of bars that are like that, you know, you can't smoke all the time. We're not handling those types of sentences right now, but with as speech reconstruction methods improve, then that's the type of embedded discourse that we'd like to maybe try to look at. But for right now, something like I guess or I know or you know or I mean, even though I guess isn't exactly like I mean, we're planning on considering it. We're telling our annotators to consider it as a filler that should be dismissed.
Well, I was just thinking about the textogrammatical
right.
Love to plead for.
Right.
This could be very easily solved just by the factor ATT, like attitude and mentality. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And well, you wouldn't get anything, nothing would get lost. And mm-hmm. It would be as getting into trash.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's something we can consider.
So.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know if it is even as easy as saying it's just a filler and you can discard it, because I can
yeah.
say the Joe billionaires, I guess, aren't going anywhere. So now it's very different. Like, you know, it's my mm-hmm. opinion. And it's not just
yeah. Opinion.
You say about this, because remember there are two different semantics also in the same
right. The annotators, I don't plan on having them because I don't want to have to teach them how to read the parse trees. They won't have the parse trees in front of them, but they will have the audio. So the annotators will be listening to the audio, and they will be marking, and in their opinion, if it seems to be vital to the sentence.
Have you considered giving them just, they don't need the parse trees, but just the MVE annotations? Because those are very simple.
Just the edits removed?
Well, not them removed, but just color code the edits and fillers.
Yeah.
Because that's actually...
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if the LGC annotators considered it
I
to
mean,
be.
I think what you're doing mm-hmm. is a great level of annotation, but you should be able to build on top of the existing.
Right. I planned on at least comparing it to the two, but you're right, maybe having that information available to the annotators, we can integrate that into the tool. It could speed up their process and make things more consistent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, just to make another example, because I can't remember your words or someone said, are you going skiing? And someone said, skiing, I think I will. Or, yeah, whatever, something mm-hmm. like this. It almost would, I mean, do you have some sort of adaptation guidelines in place so that people aren't going to be making pragmatic adjustments and switching things to a more canonical word order?
I'm actually, well, so for example, the sentence I have, the Joe Millionaires, we know that's not going anywhere. That could just be fronting and, you know, changing the focus of the sentence. But... And this is the decision that I made for the annotation guide, but other people might have different approaches. My thought is that we really want to get just to the core of the sentence. So if you were to translate that into Hindi or something, then would you need to have that same topic focus? In my mind, when I'm trying to preserve content, I'm focusing, I'm deciding that fronting maybe isn't important as just deciding what the main verbs and arguments are. But I'm sure there could be people who disagree with that decision.